Hello all, and welcome to a special Boiler Room edition of the Wide World of Wargaming, coming to you live from the East Bay of California, where it is way too hot for this ever in this part of the world. I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me as the usual, Mr. Jeff Wilder.
When I left you, I was but the learner.
Yeah, but now I am the master. And then, and of course, Mr. Drew Bishop.
You ruined my thing, Vince. I was going to finish it.
Yeah, well, it's my... I took control as I am the host, so deal with it.
I was going to finish what Kylo Ren started.
We really need to rehearse more.
No, we don't. Rehearsal is for the week. We had a fairly exciting weekend, especially Jeff and I, and then the whole community got a bit of a shock. As we found out today, the Minox have been the recipient, we think, of a cease and desist order from the Mouse, the Overlords, Disney, via their, what would you call them, henchmen at Asmodai. And then a little bit more controversy as a result of the Riverside Hyperspace trial. But first, we will talk about the Deluxe Wave Championship Tournament that Jeff and I participated in and that I was fortunate enough to emerge victorious in. Jeff, let's start with what your games were like, since 4-0 is not hard to explain.
So I was flying for the first time ever Inferno Swarm, and I had Sane instead of Del Mico because I liked the idea of Sane automatically laying a damage down if somebody was in her bullseye arc. In practice, I think I got that in all of my games. I think I got that off twice. So if I play Inferno Swarm again, I will switch to Del Mico. So I have four pretty good games. I lost the first game. I don't want to sound too bitter about it, but we got five turns in on the game. My opponent was pretty new and very slow. And so I would routinely have my six dials down before he had laid down a dial. I mean, this is after we started engaging. I'm not talking about the first couple of turns. But and then the reason that was a problem was that the variance on the initial perfect engage was abysmal. Perfect engage on Thane and six TIE fighters did 2 points of damage to Thane. So it was just, you know, blank city.
Heard you screaming across the... building during that game.
So I had a really interesting experience in my third game that I'll mention that touches on this, but I don't want to go into it too deeply, but it was pretty good. I Dan Morris, who finished third in our game, he was playing double infiltrators, and he just sort of had a derp moment that he immediately regretted, where he plopped Dooku down at range one of my front tie, and Dooku was erased and without shooting.
Oof.
So I swarmed up both PS1s to four, and then Dooku was just gone. Third game was a pretty standard game against a pretty good guy, and fourth game was the way that TIE fighters, I think the way that a TIE swarm play is really supposed to go. I'd say that the fourth game was the most standard of playing the Inferno Swarm from what I know about it. Now, keep in mind, I had never flown the list before, so I'm now 3-1 lifetime with Inferno Swarm. But the thing that I did was I was using my regionals dice, so I have three sets of regionals dice, and I was using those, and I did this experiment where I swapped out my first set of regionals dice, which are transparent. I noticed they're rolling a lot of blanks. So I was like, okay, so I swapped them out and started rolling better. Then I was like, okay, you're being superstitious and stupid. So I swapped them back in, started rolling blanks. So I think those dice, I'm actually going to give them the old saltwater test. I think those dice might actually have bubbles in them that make them biased. So I'm actually going to test that. Granted, this is a sample size that's way too small to be reliable. But if I give them the saltwater test and it pans out, I won't be surprised.
It's the only way to be sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's not quite from orbit. I was going to say, it's not quite nuking them from orbit, but it is the next best thing.
believe me, I was tempted.
There was a lot of never flown it before hanging around at that tournament. Actually, the list I went 4-0 with, I had never even, I won't say I wrote it the night before, but it was essentially the list I talked about last week, the Levon Wedge Lando list, only I swapped out Levon for Dutch Yander. And I have to say, with proton torpedoes, and I have to say the difference was not dramatic. It was extraordinary because the offense coming out of that list was way better than I ever expected. I thought it was going to be a plink list. I thought it was going to be a dodge and plink list. It is not. It is a focus, delete, move, focus, delete. And it happened every single game I played with it. My first game was a grind out against another four-ship, against a full-on four-ship Rebel player, XYYU. And then my second game was against the guy you played round three with the double B-wing Jake and Bodhi Rook, which is one of the U-wing pilots we don't see for good reason. I didn't have the heart to tell him. Round three was against the list that I was most worried about, Vader Fell Double Scimitar. I was fortunate enough to win that one because at a critical moment, Fell made a wrong call and flew past the Falcon, and the Falcon proceeded to one-tap him. Three dice, crit hit, and he blanked out his roll.
Yikes.
And that tends to turn a game pretty hard. And my last game was against the guy I actually gave a ride to the tournament, David Stewart, with his Rebel beef. And I deleted Wedge in the second turn of engagement. Then I killed the Gray Squadron he brought. And then he scooped on the spot because I hadn't lost anybody. And Wedge was still on full health. And my Falcon was basically untouched. Lando's not really good. Lando's great. And
I mean,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was gonna say in the games I've flown a few games with Lando, long before I even knew Han was like a thing, and it was just like, you know, if things were a little bit cheaper, you know, Lando could. I mean, it's an initiative 5 coordinating Falcon, that, oh man, it's pretty good. It's
coordinating pretty good at range 3 Falcon.
Yeah.
Yep.
The
range 3 on a large base, so it's huge.
It's essentially range 3. It's range 4.
A third of the board.
Yeah. The biggest thing about this list that I realized is that because all of the effects except for my Swarm Wedge are range 3 or longer, I mean, Dutch, you don't need range to pass a target lock, I don't have to stay together. You know? I can essentially come in through, I can fly through rocks and not at all be worried, which most lists can't do. And as soon as I get the Falcon around, like flanking someone, I don't want to say it's over, but it's very close. Because you can't turn away from Wedge and Dutch with Torps who are double modding every turn. And you can't chase, if you chase the Falcon, and if you go head up with the Falcon, I have Hotshot Gunner. I'll swarm Lando up to 6 and eat your token. And you're essentially offensively worthless.
Yeah, that was great flexibility. The being able to choose whether to swarm Dutch up to get the Alpha Strike Proton or Lando up to take away that defensive or offensive token. That's a lot of great flexibility.
And the biggest thing that I'm realizing, like as I go back over these games and as I talk to people, the flexibility of what initiative you play is also huge. It doesn't matter if I have first now.
Right.
Because yes, you'll have maybe you'll have position on Wedge, but if I play slow, no, you won't. I mean, you won't. You just won't. And then if I'm forced to shoot first, I swarm Lando up to 6 and I eat your mods. And then you're shooting back at Wedge with maybe a target lock if you're Vader. You know?
Yep.
And then if I let you go first, but you don't have any I6s, I swarm Dutch up to 6 and I punch you in the mouth with double modded Dutch and double modded Wedge with a Proton Torp. Night night. One game I deleted a 9-hole Braylon on the first turn.
So the Inferno Swarm is so I would say I made at least one notable mistake in every game, but the squad is so strong that notable mistakes just didn't matter much.
You say strong. I think the word you're looking for is forgiving.
I mean, sort of. You do have to get their arcs on each other, and while Howlrunner and Aiden are alive, you do need to keep them together, and that's not easy. It's easy to get that initial engage, and if you get an average or better initial engage, your game just got much easier. Yeah,
you're pretty much good to go.
Yeah. If you get a bad engage on the first one, and I don't necessarily mean positioning, I mean just the dice roll lower than average or whatever, then you've got it's going to be difficult to keep the swarm together, supporting each other the way they need to, and have all of them have shots on target. So it's not exactly forgiving. Like, I don't think it's really a swarm, a list for a total beginner, but I do think that once somebody's got a feel for X-Wing maneuvering, that it's a list that can absorb a notable mistake a game. Which, you know, the Imperial Ace list generally cannot, unless you get literally lucky, they can't absorb a notable mistake in a game.
Well, no, definitely not Fel. You cannot make a mistake with Fel.
Yeah, I was going to say, he is definitely not as... So, like, in 1.0, you know, maybe that Fel who, you know, overshot the Falcon would have survived, but in 2.0, you can't do that with him now. No. Like, you have to...
He wouldn't have taken any damage.
Yeah.
He would have turned his 3 blanks into 3 evades, and that's fine.
Right. At least 2 evades and taken 1, as opposed to getting completely one shot, right? Like,
well, he had no token.
so if you have the evade if you had the evade token and then auto thrusters, right? Like,
Drew,
because
he had no tokens.
Yeah. Yo, so, buddy, 1.0 soon tier fell. Focus, evade, focus. Good luck with your hotshot removing all of those green tokens.
How would he have gotten any of
because it's 1E, dude.
Yeah.
Because it's 1E. That's what Fel does.
Hey, that's what he did. And Drew's even ignoring Palp and Stealth Device.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So, but either way, that was the whole point, is that, you know, hey, this is a, you know, this happens, right? Like, second edition, you cannot be that reckless with Soontier Fel, like, at all.
Fel is just an exceptionally designed ship.
He's great.
He is one of the highlights of their redesign of 2E.
Yep.
He's exactly what an Imperial Ace should be. You can master him and do really well, but he will fall to an unlucky role that, because you made a mistake, he'll just vanish.
Speaking of Imperial Aces, Jeff, I think it's time we had the discussion that we started a few days ago. Drew, I know that you are an avid fan of the Imperial Ace, shall we call it, archetype.
Sure.
It would not surprise you to find that I am not.
Nope, I couldn't tell.
But it's not for any kind of... I want to be perfectly clear on this. If for whatever reason I had been born an Imperial player, because who knows how it happened. God forbid. I don't think my opinion would change very much. I think this is coming from the other gaming experience I have. I hate the idea of a list with little to no synergy between pilots beating a mutually supportive list. I think that's bad game design.
So, yeah, no, I think that, you know, with the Imperials, while their ships don't synergize well together, What they lack in synergizing, they make up for in flight and how you fly them. And I think your example of Fel getting, you know, plastered by Lando for overshooting is a perfect example of that, right? Like, maybe if the Soontir player had done something entirely different as far as maneuvering went, I mean, maybe it would have changed the game, right? Maybe he would have had a shot. Maybe he wouldn't have gotten shot at.
Right, but is it fair to have one faction that is so reliant on making the right decisions when, or one archetype, I should say, be so reliant on making the right decision when it's compared to starting with Rebels, but very soon Republic is going to be that way, where mutual support and synergy really is going to be a thing. Like, how is Fel going to push damage through on an Anakin heads up when Anakin has a Naboo handmaiden next to him and Fel's alone?
Yeah, I mean, as a Fel player, obviously that is a place that you don't like. That is a situation that you don't want to be in. But, you know, yeah, no, you're totally right. But I still feel like, you know, that's kind of where Imperials are at. That's what they do. Is they are the ace play faction currently, and we're seeing it kind of bleed over into other factions. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But I do feel like, yeah, in certain situations, especially the one that you just listed, like, yeah, it's going to be a little tough for you know, the Ace of Legends.
Well, it's not fair to compare Anakin and two handmaidens to Soontir Fel.
No, Jeff, it was just it was more of a situation, not a comparison. Like,
but I don't know, but
you're not going to one-tap the handmaiden with anything in the game right now.
No, but Soontir Fel's got backup too.
Right, but that backup's not going to save him from getting blown away.
It will if he's not in the arcs of Anakin.
That can't
be. It's hard to do, but yeah, no, it's...
Sorry. That can't be your only defense, though.
Well, it's not your only defense. You can also roll well on your green dice. But look, what I don't like is the idea, the implicit idea here that every faction needs to build with synergy. That's in my view, that's bad game design. I like the fact that the Imperials have synergy. They just have high level synergy. They don't have a lot. Most of their ship abilities are not, I'm going to do this with this ship, and there's clearly a best ship to do this with, and that ship is going to help this ship, and we're going to have this web of synergy, right? Imperial synergy is often just one ability that is helping the squad as a whole, the Palpatine being the highest level example of that. It's one ability that helps the squad as a whole. It is synergy because Palpatine is best with high agility arc dodging ships. And that's what you're mostly going to fly with Palpatine, is these high agility arc dodging ships. It's just I would not want to play, and I play all factions except, as we know, Separatists. I wouldn't want to play the game as much if I had to build a synergistic monster like Rebel Beef for every faction. I wouldn't want to play that game.
Yeah, it would be a little much.
But is it...
I feel...
Okay, I like I said, this is purely coming from my other game experiences. There's another version of that we used to call Hero Hammer, which is, I think, what you guys are describing. That was bad. People hated that because it was so heavily weighted towards whoever can build the best heroes. And it's entirely a fluke of design as to whether or not the guys who can't run that level of hero have a chance. So, like, for example, let's say that when the points changes come out, Rebel Beef disappears. Who's the counter to Imperial Aces then?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you, and it's unfortunate with all these what-if scenarios, but I do feel like it depends on what styles and types of beef disappear, right? Like, if the U-Wing...
Two handmaidens are the counter to Imperial Aces, then?
I threw it out there as the easiest example of Republic defensive synergy I had in mind.
I mean, there's your answer. If Rebel Beef disappears, there will be things that rise to Imperial Aces to meet him.
Not necessarily.
Sorry to cut you off, Drew. I just saw an opportunity to...
No, you're good. I completely agree. I do feel like, you know, obviously it's not the end of the world, but at the same time, you know, we are going to see, you know, we are going to see things come back, and not that I'm, you know, feeling like it's the end of the world, but I do love the idea that each faction has, you know, what they're best at. And as far as I know, you know, Imperials right now, they're kind of all about the aces, and we are seeing other factions come up with aces as well, but obviously not as, you know, maybe not as good or as strong, because the, you know, the factions do better when played differently.
Or it's the fact that Imperials are literally the only faction with two playable small ship I-6s, because nobody's going to take Fen Rao in the shuttle.
I mean, I wouldn't say that, I wouldn't go out, way out on that limb until we see costs.
No. But I mean, literally, because... right now, in as we know it, is there another faction that can put two I-6s on the table and still include four ships?
No, I mean, not that I know of.
So is it really about the Imperials are better at ace play, or is it just a fluke of game design?
I don't know if I said better, but I just meant overall, like, that's just the faction.
Well, I don't think it's a fluke, because I think it's very intentional. I think it's intentional that Imperial aces are better at being reactive as opposed to synergistic. I think that's intentional. I think that clearly we know that I don't particularly love. I don't like the idea of people who play, especially exclusively, I-6 repositioning aces and consider themselves the pinnacle of X-Wing skill. I think that that's absurd. There's no skill involved when you have perfect knowledge and double repositioning.
Right.
But I do think it's intentional, and I think that as long as you're able to walk the line, it's a good style difference. It's a very good faction identity difference with Rebels. I'll tell you what worries me, because it doesn't feel like faction identity to me. I'm not saying that it's broken, but the Dreadlock squad worries me.
Yeah.
There's no faction identity there as far as I can tell. It's just put a bunch of hit points down, roll a lot of dice, and re-roll a lot of dice.
Well, it's a rebel list. That's the thing.
It kind of is.
It's a rebel list out of scum, which is not supposed to be... If you're playing for faction identity, it shouldn't exist.
Yeah. There's no dirty trick in that list whatsoever. None.
It's very unscum-like.
Yeah.
Not only that, it's not even like there's any real synergy to it. It's just put a turret on Drea and hope they fly into the right quarter of the board.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're using you're not proccing two or three pilot abilities a turn to achieve maximum modification on offense and defense. You're just going, hey, if you fly into this, you know, 180 degree arc, you are now getting rerolled on 9 dice. Good luck.
You're flying into a wood chipper, yeah. And that's not a faction identity. And I think that it's currently beatable, and that's certainly not my gripe. My gripe is that it's beatable by Rebel Beef. It's beatable by Imperial Aces. It's probably beatable by Republic.
Well, the Phantoms are what's keeping it in control right now.
The Phantoms and Rebel Beef, I think, are the main things keeping it in control. And I do fear that if something isn't done for it, then that's going to be the really, really boring list we're going to be facing in, you know, a quarter of the list we're going to see are going to be Dreadlock lists.
In hyperspace and all that, yeah.
What I really think is going to be a thing is if Dreadlocks doesn't change, you will see people going to heavy Alpha Strike lists. Because if they don't, they have no chance. I think I don't want to say maybe no chance, but very, very little chance.
Yeah, I was going to say, not that they have no chance, but yeah, they have very little chance of actually, you know, walking out of that, you know, winning.
Yeah, even at the range three stage, you're just, you know, the other guy is shooting basically with Arc Predator, right? Like full, you know, full frontal Arc Predator. You're right. If you're lucky, you're double modded, but he's got 9 hole. You've got maybe 5 or 6 or less, depending on
at
your
the
ship.
Most, yeah.
Don't they have 10 hole?
No, they're 4 or 5. I'm pretty sure they're 4 or 5. It might even be 3.
Yeah,
or
they
five.
Used to be.
I'm pretty sure they're 10 hole, dude.
No way.
Pretty sure.
What is it? Is it Scrug or Skurg? I never remember.
Skurg. Because I was putting hull upgrade on them, and you know I wouldn't be putting hull upgrade on them to make.
You are correct, Jeff, but it's 6-4, not 5-5.
Yeah. I didn't say it was 5-5.
Oh, I thought you said it was 5-5.
They used to be 5-5.
Yeah, I for some reason thought they were 9. That's beefy. That's a beefy boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could bring, I mean, I'm not even sure about the whole Alpha Strike thing. You could bring your Alpha Strike, and if you get a perfect Alpha Strike, you can erase one. If Drea presents herself, you could erase Drea. But that is basically your win condition. You have to erase one or erase Drea in the initial engagement. If you don't, I think there's nothing you do there. Not with an Alpha Strike.
Well, the consensus seems to be the solution to the Drea locks will be if they put veteran turret gunner back up, because that will make that list unplayable.
Yeah.
That's the veteran simple turret fix. Gunner coming. Or even, frankly, you put dorsal turret back up. Because they all run, or the turrets, you know, whichever. There's a lot of ways to fix that without wrecking the rest of the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of wrecking the game, let's go ahead and talk about Riverside. the classic argument over fortressing versus, quote-unquote, intelligent play has reared its ugly head once again.
Versus, I'm not fortressing.
Especially not when you're playing quad Star Viper. I'm not fortressing with my sideways barrel roll 1 forward. Now, I have to be honest, I blame the other guy for not just charging him. Star Vipers are made of glass. You're flying arcs.
And arc.
It was one arc?
He's flying 4 Torrents, an arc, and Luminara.
Oh, he would have beaten that on dice.
Yeah, that's it. He had the advantage in Final Salvo. Jesus. 13-12. So the other guy had to come to him effectively.
Let me quote Bionicle. Could have, but he didn't.
Yeah.
So just for people who haven't seen this, basically what happened was the 4-star Viper player and the Republic player circled around in their own corners for literally 1 minute and 54 seconds.
Whoa, wait. That 1 minute and 54 seconds.
I'm sorry, 1 hour and 54 minutes. 1 minute and 54 seconds would be completely reasonable. And we wouldn't be talking about it if it were completely reasonable. So 1 hour and 54 minutes. Then the Star Viper player, knowing he had to kill something, have points on something, came at the other guy. The other guy set his dial wrong and flew his arc off the board. Thus basically ending the game. Now, before the show, Vince was asking me if it was done intentionally or Drew. I can't remember.
I think it was me. Yeah, I was like, did that happen intentionally?
And I was, my response was, well, I mean, maybe it would certainly be funny, but why would you waste 1 hour and 54 minutes of your life to set up that brief joke? So I don't think it was intentional, but, you know, you'd have to ask the player.
Well, you'd have to put him through a lie detector test, really.
So the controversy is that bad? Or is that because it is not against the literal rules of the game, is it fine?
So I, unsurprising, no one has have a fairly strong opinion on this.
As do I.
And it has to do a little bit with the fact that in my mind, I probably have somewhere in my personality is a streak of wannabe macho man who thinks that every game of X-Wing should be settled with, all right, screw it. Let's just go at each other and roll dice and we'll see who wins. But at least, you know, that involves a certain amount of playing the actual game. This kind of absolute garbage, and I'm not afraid to say that, and I'll put my name on it, Vincent Morgado, Alameda, California, 94501. If either of these guys want to come find me, please message me and I'll let you know. This is a...
Oh my God, are we having a Justin Bieber moment? Are you calling out Tom Cruise?
Like, this is a disgrace. I'm sorry. That's what this is. You insulted everyone else who came to that event and took it seriously. And the fact that your defense is, and the defense of some, I'm going to call them what they are, gremlins on the internet, is that, oh, well, it's within the rules. Go fuck yourself, okay? Other people showed up to this event, played it, took it seriously, tried their hardest, paid money to be there. And this is the result they get to watch from the quote-unquote champion of their event. This is now Riverside's name in the X-Wing community is, oh, isn't the place where those two guys basically fortressed for an hour and a half? No. All right. Play X-Wing or don't show up. If you want to play that way, play it in your garage so you and your friend can have fun. This doesn't do anybody else any good. It doesn't do anything for the game, and you're not a better player for it. Fuck out of here.
But how do you really feel?
I wish I had a joke for this. I wish I had a joke for that, Jeff.
He sounds like a man who was sitting on the edge of his seat for an hour and 54 minutes and never came.
No, the amount of denied release from that game. No, I'm kidding. I didn't watch it. I didn't find out about this till this morning.
The streamers actually wrote for, I would guess, about 80 minutes. They had on the stream, we will come back when something happens.
Good.
We promise.
They have every right to do that and go do something interesting.
So, Drew, I agree with Vince, let's say 95%. Don't faint. I'm interested in your take.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for quite a long time, actually, because while I do enjoy the chess-like matches at the highest level of X-Wing competitivity, I don't know what I'm talking about there, but there is a level of engaging and disengaging and engaging again and disengaging. And I do feel like, you know, as the games and times have gone on, we have seen play like that become a problem where, you know, people get to the top tables and then they're like, ah, all right, I'm just so tired. I'm not going to play the game. I mean, they don't even have to be tired and they still don't play the game. And so what I feel what should be done as far as tournament rules go is, you know, in a match like that, if no one has done any damage to each other, it will go to whoever has the best MOV going into that match. So it forces one person to engage with the other. Now, I'm not saying for everyone to take the scum astromech and shoot themselves, right, to deal damage to themselves, to be like, hey, look, I did damage to my ship, so I'm winning, right? I do feel like something, as far as the top level of competitive X-Wing play, something has to happen to force people to engage. And I think that's one way to do it. Albeit, you know, Final Salvo, I actually, thinking about it, obviously when the Minox came up and it was like, you know, what if you didn't like Final Salvo, how could they fix this? I do feel like having something in the tournament rules saying like, you know, damage has to be done to one of the sides if you want to be considered, you know, like a winner in that match.
Right.
And I don't know if that's, you know, going to be better for the game or not, but I do feel like, you know, if we go to the MOV thing, walking into the final table, that will force at least one person to try and play, and it will force the other person to be, you know, there. I've never seen a gingerbread man in real life, but I'll be honest with you, I watched that stream, it seemed like there were two gingerbread men playing on that stream where they were like, I'm not gonna come at you, you gotta come for me, And then finally one of them was like, sure, I'll come to you. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh no, I set the wrong dial. Oops.
So,
Drew, I take it you don't think it was unintentional. You think it might have been intentional.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was intentional.
Oh, you don't think it was?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, right? One of the last regional bouts I had where I had the game, I had a dirt moment. I was like, that'll work. Like,
you did have a dirt moment, but that was a dirt moment that was completely understandable.
Yeah, you were in a game. Yeah. You were playing a game. This guy wasn't.
Exactly.
There was no stress on him.
I don't know about that, Vince. I was playing the Aces game with a goddamn ghost. And yeah. I'll tell you, man, I dodged those three defender arcs with a goddamn ghost.
Let me get, was large ship boost involved?
Yes.
Maybe. Yarp.
All right, exactly.
But anyways, moving on. This is, yeah, so other gingerbread men.
So I agree with Drew. The 5% that I don't agree with Vince, which I think is purely preference. Vince likes to get in there, mix it up immediately, roll the dice. I have no problem with that. That's preference, and I say go for it. I do like the dance a little bit. And I don't want any fix of this problem that, in my opinion, we saw at Riverside. I do think it's a problem. I mean, I almost quoted Vince in my response on the FFG forum. I was like, if you don't want to play fucking X-Wing, don't fucking play X-Wing, is what I wrote in the vernacular that the forum allows. But I'm in an interesting position because Paul Heaver, and we have a complicated history, Paul and I, we've known each other from the beginning of the game, used to be friends, and we had a falling out over the Roanoke 8 and everything. I agree with what he posted on the forum just 100%. I think Paul nailed it. Paul said, look, this is, we see by the rules, the literal rules, that this is, FFG doesn't want to see, Fortress Inc. doesn't want to see this kind of stalling for time. Doesn't want to see it. So stop looking at the rule for Fortress Inc. and look at the sportsmanship rules where it says don't stall for time.
Yep.
And if you're a TO, don't be afraid to use that portion of the tournament rules to make the game a game. Don't be afraid to do that. The number of people, the number of tournament organizers who have posted saying there's nothing I can do because they're playing within the rules is just mind-boggling.
It's cowardice.
The sportsmanship rules exist for exactly this kind of fucking reason. It's why they exist.
It's cowardice.
Use them. Use them. And this will stop happening. It will stop happening if TOs enforce sportsmanship and stalling rules. Now, I am fine if players, two skilled players, dance around the board looking for an ideal engagement for 45 minutes. I'm fine with that. There's a genuine level of skill there looking for when you've got the upper hand on your opponent. That reminds me very much of the very limited stuff that I know about real dogfighting. You look for angles and engagement, and then you pounce. No problem with that. These people circled in their own corners for an hour and 54 minutes. That's not playing X-Wing completely with Vince. You basically insulted everybody else, the other 87 players who were at Riverside. And please just don't do that. And T.O., please enforce the sportsmanship rules. People need to play. They need to play X-Wing.
So
if you're not there to play X-Wing, then concede or agree to just final salvo.
There's a problem with the Jeff. Like you said, I'm glad to see that we do agree on about 95% of it. The other thing you are absolutely right in doing is calling out TOs. I didn't do that because it's a reflex that I'm still getting over. I say that like someone who hasn't told judges to fuck off before. Tournament organizers in war games across the board that I've noticed have a very serious lack of spine when it comes to actually enforcing the rules. And I think it's because they don't want to risk offending players. The problem is you are there to officiate. Your personal feelings cannot be involved in that. You can't, you know, just as you wouldn't give a friend a legitimate, an illegitimate call, you shouldn't give preferential behavior to the top table, like just because they managed to make it there. The rules exist on this. You are not allowed to do that. Call the game if they're going to do it. Literally just say, if it's been 80 minutes, guess what, TO? They're not going to fight each other. So you know what you do? Hey, guys, I'm calling the clock. We're going to salvo. Done. Yeah. If you go, here's what you want to do. Honestly, this is what will solve this problem, and it's heavy-handed solution, but guess what? The X-Wing community has not what's the word? The X-Wing community has not, you know, accorded itself very well since I've joined. And I'm seeing a lot of the same problems that I've seen in 40K before. You have to be heavy-handed with players. You have to drop bans. You have to modify the outcome of games if you want people to start obeying the rules. So here's what happens. Every regular game, if there is no damage inflicted in the first 50% of the clock, zero damage, you go to final salvo on the spot. 37 minutes, 30 seconds, gone. If a final table, 40 minutes. If nothing happens in the first 40, you go to salvo. You stop giving these people time and you stop giving them room for their bullshit.
I just don't think we have the same definition of, and I suspect Drew is probably more with me on this, but I don't think we have the same definition of nothing happens. I think that when...
I'm talking specifically if they're doing this. My goon ass knows the difference between jockeying for position and outright stalling.
Okay, but you can't judge that by damage is my point. If they're really playing the game and they're not, there's still no damage at 37 and a half minutes, but they're really playing the game, then they're not breaking the sportsmanship rules in my
opinion. If they played 40 minutes, which... Let's be fair. In X-Wing, that should be four turns, especially if there's no dice.
40 minutes should be eight turns, but yes, go ahead.
You should know what's happening. You should be able to tell if they're actually playing or if they're jockeying.
Absolutely. Absolutely agreed. If that's what you're talking about, I agree. And that's where the TO needs to have spine, needs to enforce the sportsmanship stalling rules. And the thing about it is, I don't think if TOs will stand up and say this isn't playing the game, this isn't sportsmanship, if they will do that, there's not going to need to be bans. There's not going to need to be a heavy-handed, if you don't do damage, I'm kicking you from the...
Right. I want to head this off, you know? I want an ounce of prevention before I have to start handing out a pound of cure.
Yeah. What we need is we need people who recognize that the game of X-Wing goes beyond the literal codified rules. There are rules for sportsmanship conduct for a reason. They are there for a reason. It is not acceptable to say there's nothing I can do as a TO because they weren't breaking rules. They were breaking sportsmanship rules. And yes, as a TO, you have to use judgment. Use your judgment. That's what you're there for.
Mm-hmm. That's what you took money for.
Right.
Like at a certain point, you also have to realize that this is not only a game thing. This is a business. You are now players have a right to expect quality judgment from people that they are trusting with their money.
Drew, and does it surprise you at all that Paul is taking this position?
No, not at all. I think, like I said before, we've seen it time and time again, and I do agree. I think I don't know if I've told this story yet on this podcast, but back when I was at the Hoth System Open, I was playing against a it was actually one of the best rounds, best games of X-Wing I've ever played. I was running Whisper Chernu versus Triple Jumpmaster, and in a first round engagement with Chernu at range 3 and Whisper at range 1, I popped a Jumpmaster, 9 health.
Wow.
Which was insane. And that single activation, that single thing basically gave me the game. But there was a point in that game when it didn't look like it was going to be my game. Brent Wong was the judge at the time. And at one point he kind of sat down next to me, and you know, he had his arms folded, and he would occasionally look down at his clock, and then he would watch the game. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh man, if, you know, to me, an hour and 15 minutes, you know, at that point when it's Whisper and 2 Jumpmasters left, it's, you know, it's like the time takes forever. And at one point we were sitting there and I looked down at Brent, and Brent has his head down, and he's had his head down for the last like 15 minutes. And it wasn't 15 minutes, but I kind of like, you know, tapped him on the shoulder. And I was like, whoa, bro, wait, look, he's putting his dial down. Something's happening. And Brent's head slowly looks up at me and goes, I'm watching the clock to make sure he's not breaking any rules. And I freaking lost it. I was like, oh my God, he's awake. He's actually checking to make sure this guy isn't slow playing me, which he was. So eventually I did win that game, and Brent gave him like at least two warnings. And the second warning was, if I have to warn you again, you're out. I'm going to give the game to him, to me. And it was just one of those things where it's like, I do, listening to Vince, I think, you know, pulling from the 40K community and like judges and how, you know, things need to happen. I do feel like we definitely need some ground rules as far as sportsmanship goes in X-Wing, because I think this last tournament really shows, without it, like, you know, people just shit on everyone else. You know?
Can't. The fact of the matter is, you cannot trust players. That's a sad statement, but it's the truth, and we all know it. You cannot trust people to play within the spirit of the game. You have to enforce the spirit of the game.
Yeah, no, it's...
And it's sad that we have to say it. It's disgraceful that we have to say it. But just as there are rules lawyers, there are time lawyers. There are situation lawyers. There is a guy who is willing to push the envelope in every single area, and some of them in multiple areas. Yeah. And you have to be willing to drop the hammer on these guys, because they are bad for the game.
Yeah, I do want to say, though, that, you know, I agree with that, obviously. I do think that there always has to be, no matter if floor rules are created, for instance, there are a number of reasons it's not a good idea, but just for the sake of argument, let's say there are shot clocks for setting dials, all right? If those kinds of rules are created, if the game is more codified, there always needs to be a sportsmanship clause that is subject to subjectivity of a trusted TO. If you don't trust your TO, don't play in that tournament. If you do trust your TO, a TO needs a way to adjudicate things that are not specifically codified in the literal rules of the game. They need that to keep a game fair, to keep a tournament moving. And that should always exist.
Yeah, and the sad truth is, you'll know exactly what side people come. You'll know who the abusive players are and who the non-abusive ones are on their response to this question. People give themselves away in the sides they choose.
Yes, it's true.
So anyone that the majority of these, anyone who comes out strenuously against this is going to be someone that you cannot trust at a table.
I'm all for trying to stick to what FFG has, you know, laid in the groundwork of the rules. But I do feel like, you know, again, this tournament that just happened really shows that, you know, it's been taken a little too far. And I wouldn't put it past any of the best TOs in, you know, the X-Wing community to start enforcing a little bit more of, you know, these sportsmanship standards.
Yeah. So I just want to point out that the Supreme Court of the United States had a very famous case where they were judging obscenity. And one of the Supreme Court justices very famously said, I can't tell you what it is. I can't write a rule to define what is obscene.
But I know it when I see
what it. What is pornography. But I know it when mm-hmm. I see it. And that is what Paul Heaver said in the forum post about this. TOs, he actually said all players. And I agree with him. Even the players that are doing it know that it's wrong at some level.
Yep.
They
yep.
know it when they see it. They know fortressing and stalling when they're doing mm-hmm. it and when they see it. And we just need TOs that are willing to say, yep, I know it's happening. Here's your warning. You better engage next round, or you better start engaging.
I better see you moving towards your exactly. opponent, or moving, you know, at least up one side of the board.
Exactly.
And you know what? If you want to be the guy that flies up and down the side of the board, guess what? You're predictable, and your opponent's going to catch you out. So good luck.
I've seen two different people do that at the same tournament. Now, that was back when there wasn't a final salvo, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, I think it was very similar to what Brent did. I don't mean to like throw him under the bus or anything, but he was, you know, one warning, two warnings, and then the third warning is like, you know,
well, that's the third's it, not a right? warning. Like the third is get the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly. Three strikes and you're out. And I do feel like, again, that's, you know, as far as TOs go, that's a very measurable, like that's a good thing to do, right? You're giving people warnings. You're actively participating in the game where the players playing the game are not actively participating.
Yeah, and well, the only thing that I could say to that is I'd like to see it improved in a way in that the warning is to the room. The warning is not to the player. This is your first warning. The warning is to the room. The next person that I see doing this, they've already been warned once.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's I have no problem with that either. Probably not hard for you guys to guess that I've seen Hang 'em High one too many times. Let's go ahead and we're running that clock up as we tend to do, but I'm going to run as long as I feel like because this is good stuff. Let's talk at last about our good friends over at the Minox Squadron and what everyone is assuming the Chicken Little moment has arrived for X-Wing.
I do want to say really quick that they, as far as we know, we don't know specifically what they've been told or what they've sent.
Correct.
Disney or Asmodee or anything like that. We are just assuming that because they are using the name of a fictional Star Wars creature, they are being asked to either start paying royalties for using it, pay the royalties for, you know, copywriting it, or are being asked to change it so that they don't have to do this.
Yeah. So just to even more clarity, we don't know that they've actually gotten a cease and desist. We don't know, they may very well just be doing this as an ameliorative and basically to avoid getting a cease and desist. They may be doing it as a gesture. They may even be doing it for that reason and as a gesture of goodwill. Look, we know that we're using a term that is copyrighted or trademarked to the Star Wars universe. So we're going to change that. I do know that Ryan, in some comments on the Facebook post, somebody, for example, suggested the California crates as a joke. Yeah. And Ryan was like, well, that's not going to work because crate is this in the same boat. So it is a matter of IP, of intellectual property. That is the underlying rationale for why they're doing this. We just don't know to what extent they've gotten some kind of formal warning.
Wow, I didn't – somehow I'm failing in my Star Wars knowledge. I didn't know crate was a Star Wars term until this very moment.
Oh, my God. The crate dragons are freaking awesome. I'm going to pull a picture of one to show you right now.
We talked about this this has been coming up in discussions for a while, ever since the Asmodai letter came out, I think. You know, what does that really mean? Was it really March? Is it even legitimate? Jeff, you're in the field of law. Did that letter seem legitimate to you? Did it feel like something, you know, someone of your profession would have drafted?
So I'm not sure that I saw a letter. I saw a posting, and it was pretty informal in the way that it was written. But it was also very clear, and I do think I wouldn't go so far as to say that I'm certain that it came from that it came from the pen of a lawyer. Lawyers tend to have a pretty difficult time writing in that level of informality when discussing matters of law. But I do think that it was written and showed a level of knowledge of intellectual property that it was advised by lawyers and probably reviewed by lawyers.
Or if it isn't being done so now, it would have been in the somewhat, you know, in sometime in the
it's
future.
It's giving people, you know, a warning in language that is legal language that is also easy to understand. Like
exactly.
it's a digestible form of the proper language for the community at large. Like, guys, this is coming. You all need to be prepared for it. We didn't want to do it, but Darth Mouse takes no prisoners, you know? And Jeff, you said it probably best. Disney doesn't fuck around.
Yeah. So there's a concept in law, a related concept called waiver and estoppel. And estoppel, by the way, is my favorite lawyer word. But waiver and estoppel essentially come to the same thing. And the idea is, look, if you did this in the past and you allowed it to happen, you're not allowed to say now that it's not permitted, right? If you knowingly let people use your trademarks and your copyrights, you're not allowed now to say, hey, people aren't. People can't use my trademarks and copyrights. You've waived that. Mm-hmm. Or if the related idea of estoppel is it's sort of the converse. You can't force somebody to do something that you never forced in the past. All right. So, the reason that that's important is that in intellectual property law, you can passively give away the rights to your intellectual property. You can passively let people claim your rights. And there are some exceptions. I'll get into one in a second. That's one of my favorites. But in almost all cases, there's no animus. It's purely a matter of if I don't protect this right, I lose this right. And to some extent, intellectual property has come nowhere near catching up to the internet.
Oh, no.
There are
all
kinds of issues on the internet with intellectual property. But the takeaway is there's no animus from Disney or Asmodee or FFG to this posting, to any cease and desist they might send in the future, even to any actual legal action they might take. It isn't because they don't like X-Wing community or specific people. I guarantee you that isn't playing into it. It's purely a matter of we have very valuable property, and if we don't protect it, we lose it. I mentioned that I had a favorite. So long ago, TSR, the originator of Dungeons & Dragons, had a game based on Indiana Jones, and it was called the Indiana Jones role-playing game. And they tried to trademark the word Nazi.
Yeah, great idea.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Down to putting the trademark symbol next to Nazi everywhere it appeared in the rule book. That's one of my favorite examples of intellectual property overreach. And by the way, the reason that that doesn't work is the reason that Gold Squadron Podcast is probably fine. you can't copyright words without the context that requires them to be associated with intellectual property.
Right.
You can't do
it's
that.
Essentially so, mundane words cannot be like mundane terms cannot be copyrighted.
Fun movie fact. I was just watching, because I'm a big Godzilla fan, I rewatched Kong Skull Island, and the set of 12 helicopters that they have in that movie, they are called Gold Squadron also, which I'm sure is a throwback to
Star Wars. I thought they were Griffin Squad.
Now that I think about it.
They have Griffins on them. It's not Griffin Squadron?
No, it's because he says right before they pull off, he's like, Gold Squadron, let's go. And I was like, hey, I know that.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. I was like,
you know.
But yeah, no.
Sorry, Drew, go ahead.
No. I was getting back to what Jeff was going to finish.
I find it interesting that X-Wing has been so far behind in this legal, you know, kind of the legal morass, because this has been coming up with another famously litigious company who needs no introduction, Games Workshop. Some people probably, even in the X-Wing hobby, are familiar with Chapter House Studios, who were doing an alternative drop pod model for years. And one day they just started getting C&D letters, and they tried to fight it. And that fight led to Games Workshop renaming half the factions in the game. They can't copyright the term Space Marines, so they don't use it anymore. Right. They copyright Adeptus Astartes. They can't copyright the term Imperial Guard, so they started using Astra Militarum. A ton of the content has been changed to an extremely, you know, what they call gothic terminology, so that it can be copyrighted. And it's funny that X-Wing skated for so long.
Well, what's really interesting about that is that it has the side benefit of, if you do it right, it has the side benefit of providing a lot of atmosphere to your game.
Right, that too.
To your intellectual
property. But 40K has never been short of atmosphere, even before the name change.
Right. So Minox, anyway, they're looking for a... they're looking for a new name. The two choices they put up, both of which are lame.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, D. I love you, man, but they're lame. Monarch Squadron and Fly Better Squadron, both of which are really lame.
How did they not come up with like a SoCal name?
Yeah, my suggestion was the Minoc Squadron, where their intro music is Shaving a Haircut, Two Bits. Get it, Minoc?
Sorry, man. This one's past me, and I like to think I know some throwback stuff.
You don't know Shaving a Haircut, Two Bits?
I don't recognize it.
It goes, dun, 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 Two Bits.
Well, I know the beat, but anyway. I recognize the beat, but I don't recognize Shaving a Haircut.
Okay. Well, it's a knock. It's a rhythm that people tap out. So if they call it My Knock Squadron, hey, man.
I would suggest that they find some way to, you know, show a little, if not Southern California pride, because there's nothing good about that part of the state, at least some California pride.
Would the five of them then become like a barbershop quartet?
There you go.
So they're the My Knox, and whenever they do that, they have a little like song thing that they sing.
Perfect five-part harmony. That'd be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty damn awesome.
There are only three My Knox. Aren't there?
I thought it was, well, Dallas, I mean, is one, isn't he, too?
Steve and Andrew, right? Like, their whole squad. Okay, gotcha.
So Andrew's the producer, and Steve is an ad, and then there's Jay, Dallas.
A studio producer, too, guy, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, and I also thought it was weird that they were like, Monarch Squadron? Monarch, again, forgot this for this Godzilla movie.
I think
that movie,
that's probably where the Monarch Squadron came from. I'd have to guess.
Yeah, I was looking at it, I was like, wait, it's the name of the organization that hunts down all the monsters. Like, why? It's Monarch. Why would you? No. I was like, I love Godzilla, and sure, Godzilla and space battles, you know, at one point in its lifestyle, you know, was a thing, but keep my Star Wars away from my monsters.
I think it's more just because of the near homonym, Monarch and Minoc.
And Minoc, yeah. No, that's probably...
Yeah, but I mean, the Minox are a big enough name in the game now that even after they stop being called the Minox, that's all we're going to call them by.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it depends on if they come up with a good name. Honestly.
I don't know. I mean, everybody still calls it the Alameda County Coliseum.
But here's the funny thing, though. Here's the funny thing. So there's intellectual property law is really interesting too, if you're a law nerd. But Xerox went to a great deal of trouble to keep people. You guys may not be old enough to know this, but what we call photocopies now were for two decades called Xerox.
Yes, I remember. I wasn't alive for it, but I remember it.
Yes. What?
I mean, I remember hearing about it from people.
Right. Right. So Xerox did a really good job of convincing people to change the name, to not call these Xeroxes. And it was a combination of like a little bit of a heavy fist. If you call this a Xerox, you can't get service on your machines, things like that. But then you have, on the other hand, you have things like Kleenex. Everybody still calls a facial tissue a Kleenex. So that one failed.
Well, I mean, Google's another great example. Google is a damn verb now. Uber is a verb.
Well, yeah, but Google's a verb because literally everybody means Google.
That's true. That's fair.
But yes, Uber, people take Lyft and say,
yeah, Uber, I'm in the Uber. Oh wait, my bad, Lyft.
Yeah. So do you guys have any good ideas for names?
Not at the moment. Just naming this podcast was like this, the length of my creative enterprise. And even then I had to steal it from the 1980s.
I'm always a fan of the original Rogue Squadron books. And while I know that stuff isn't quite canon anymore, I really enjoyed the, I don't even remember what the book is called, where I think it was Tycho, someone bets Tycho that he like can't put a squad together, and they come up with Wraith Squadron, which is basically a bunch of convicts and like ex-fighter pilots
I remember
that just come together that. And I thought that like a Wraith Squadron podcast would have been so cool, but I don't know, it's another one of those IP things, right? Like, I mean, it's more generic like Gold Squadron, but
Wraith is pretty safe.
Yeah, Wraith is completely safe. I just hope they don't feel handcuffed to using Squadron.
I really don't want X-Wing to fall to that either.
Yeah, so, you could always do Love It or Hate It. We mostly hate it now, but, Steven Gonzalez Raptor Attack was a world-beating list build. You could do something. You could try to work around that with something.
Straighten up and fly casual for my Nat King Cole squad out there.
Yeah,
and actually fly casual, please. Don't just fart around in your own corner.
Yeah,
sorry.
Have you guys ever seen anything like that at a local tournament? Even the System Open we had at KublaCon, because I've never seen any players at our tournaments do that. But of course, I haven't been to every tournament at all.
I haven't seen it. I've seen it come close in a few matches. But that was across, my entire X-Wing career. And even then, it was only done I think I can count the number of times I've seen it on a single hand. And that's in my, 5 years of X-Wing experience.
Yeah.
But, I've heard of other stories. And, I'm a big fan of Paul as well, Jeff. And I do feel like, the two of you, especially, hit the nail on the head. Like, if something's got to be done. And Vince, I think you had a great bit to add, too, and about having our judges be actual judges.
Exactly.
I'm not saying they're not judges, because I love Ian and everyone like who judges X-Wing. It's crazy. D also, he's a monster. He's great. He's my kaiju. But yeah, I just feel like taking it. That's how we take this game to the next step.
Right, and tabletop is moving in a growth direction as far as societal knowledge. People are I don't want to say that, a certain game has led the way. I'm not going to do that. But people are starting to take note. It's becoming more mainstream. People are starting to make livings off of it. After you've seen out of the people, Dion Morales if he keeps doing this, probably at some point Gold Squadron will be his whole income if he wants it to.
I would expect within a year of today that he that Dion is making his living doing Gold Squadron.
All right. I mean, it'll be travel heavy, but he could do it. Frontline Gaming, you know, in three other systems is another example. How many guys are doing the laser printing? And it's their income. You know, we had a guy on the 40K show named Tony Myers. He runs a company called Hammerhead Games. All he does is print material for games now. He does it full time. And at a certain point, you're going to get people coming in because there's money here. And do we want this to still be a thing when it's being broadcast on Twitch for not 300 people or 500 people, but 10,000 people?
I just, you know, I was thinking about that. We had probably, what, 7 people at the tournament out of 14 that I did not know, right? I was thinking, God, I hope they don't watch this stream.
Yeah.
I hope that these 7 new players, 6 or 7 new players who, Drew, it's hard to explain how enthusiastic and friendly they were. They were like, we listen to your podcast. We hate that Drew guy, but we like you too.
No, he's being nice. They hate me. But everybody does. That's my job.
No. People were very complimentary to Vince.
Can you let me be self-deprecating just for 1 second?
They were enthusiastic. It was like, oh man, this is great. This is the biggest hope I've had for 2E since Endgame closed. But God, I hope they don't watch that stream, these new players.
You know,
just please don't watch that stream.
It's not dissimilar to a problem that baseball had or has to some people. If people see that as the highest level, quote unquote, it turns them off. And it turns them off from not only watching it, but from playing it.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, if FFG and then, you know, via that Asmodai are any kind of smart, they're going to do something about it if we don't. That's the scary part everyone here should realize. We, like, for us, it's a spirit thing. For them, it's a money thing. And they will come down so much harder than we are prepared to if we force it. Like, if...
Very heavy-handed, and you're right, and it's going to be something that we don't have a say in, whereas if all they have to do now is judges need to just say, look, the sportsmanship clause means something, I'm going to enforce it, and it will, the problem will take care of itself.
I bet you this comes up at National or Worlds. I bet you in the top 8 this comes up, and somebody on FFG is going to make a phone call. And they're going to say, get this guy out of here. And that's going to be that'll either be the end of it, or it'll be such a catastrophe in the social sphere of this game that it actually hurts the game itself. It'll go either way.
They already changed that, Vince. You weren't around for that. You can't call in to a tournament and then tell them that they're
No, Drew. I mean an executive is going to call in. Like, if you think social media people aren't watching Gold Squadron, you're crazy. People watch these games.
It is a big driver. I mean, on the scale that X-Wing is on, it's gonna be a driver. The streams, especially Gold Squadron, because it's the biggest, but all of the streams are gonna drive players. Yes. They're going to and hopefully to the good. But it could also be to the bad, and I think you're right. I think that if this happens again, I think FFG will come down, and not in a good way. I don't really trust FFG to know how to fix stuff like this.
You can't trust any game company to solve a player problem, spirit problem. For us to act, for people to lounge around whose names I will not use, but they reside in certain threads and, referring to certain podcasts and say things like, you will not infringe my right not to engage my opponent. Fuck you, buddy. Yes, I will. And so will FFG. whether it's in 2E or it's in 5 years in its third edition, they're going to do something about it. So you can either adjust or you can quit. The game will not miss you. And
the damn shame of it is that they will, if these players will adjust, but they will only adjust, judging from what we've seen,
bare minimum.
They'll only adjust to match whatever literal codified rule is made. I mean, immediately after FFG codified fortressing and said, if ships don't move two turns in a row, you're fortressing. There was literal discussion on how to get around that. Like the height of skill in X-Wing is how to get around a tournament rule defining fortressing. How sad is that for the game?
You're talking about gamers, Jeff. This is what we do. This is what our people do.
I think it comes down to having, you know, as we mentioned before, having specific rules about sportsmanship and then the abilities that judges have. And I mean, they even do already have stuff like that in the tournament rules, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
it's up to a judge's discretion.
Judges,
I just feel like
maybe have this time.
If there was an additional paragraph that kind of briefly went over some of the things that they are allowed to do, we might see more people put, you know, their foot down when garbage like this happens.
That's an excellent point.
Vince, I think you were totally correct. As soon as someone is removed from a tournament setting because they have done that, you know, people are going to do it less and less.
Players always make companies intervene. That's the facts. It is always us who do this.
But I do have hope that the players, because, you know, the most famous TOs that we have, was it Ian Hamp and Brent and Dee and Chico, they're also players, and they're good players, and they're friendly players. And I think X-Wing has a chance. When 1E went to crap, players stepped up and they created a different way to play competitive X-Wing. I think that players and judges could step up and do the right thing and forestall draconian action from FFG.
I hope so.
I really hope so.
Because it's the last thing anybody wants. But, you know, well, I won't repeat it again. That's the last thing anyone wants, is forcing real regulation of what should be, essentially a unspoken rule.
Right.
And that'll be the last comparison to baseball that I make for the night. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me, folks. We do hope you will follow up on some of these stories and do your own research. And as always, form your own opinions. Please forgive me if I have been inflammatory. That is kind of my shtick. Jeff and Drew, go ahead and sign off, fellas.
Y'all have a good one, gentlemen.
Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.